Hi, everyone. My name is Josh Nason. I'm a writer, editor, and podcaster for WrestlingObserver.com, host of Josh Nason's Punch-Out. Hope you guys are well. This is an edition of JNPO Classic. This is where my look back at the WJM MMA show, a weekly show about MMA, go figure, that I used to do back in 2011, 2012 with my friend PJ Hewitt. Found the archives on a hard drive last year and wanted to unearth them and put them up here because there was a lot of interesting interviews and discussion. It's always kind of fun to look back at where we were and the time we did this show. A lot was happening in the sport. TV deals were big, and this episode was heavily centered on those because one of our guests, we had two guests on the show for the very first time, Bjorn Rebney, formerly of Bellator. He was the CEO, the man running the show. We had him on for about 15 minutes, and we also had John Howard, now formerly of the UFC, but he was preparing for a fight that weekend against Matt Brown on Versus. A lot of the discussion with Bjorn was kind of about the tournament format. He was on to promote the Bellator Summer Series on MTV2. If you guys remember, Bellator was on that network a long time ago. And we talked about, you know, the rumors that UFC was potentially going to Versus full-time, leaving Spike, and possibly Bellator moving up to go to Spike. If you guys remember that, they were part of the whole Viacom family at that time, as crazy as that is. So we talked about that type of stuff, the potential of Eddie Alvarez versus Michael Chandler for the first time, the tournament format, and all that good stuff. Then we talked to John Howard. This is not the best interview I've ever had with John. This was a little bit of a struggle, a lot of short answers. He was also probably just kind of getting ready for a weight cut and I don't know, just may have been tired. But we did talk a little bit about Glenn Davis, who used to play for the Boston Celtics and doing some training with him and the fight with Matt Brown. So not the best interview. Gets a little bit better as we get going. But just kind of warn you there. The Bjorn interview is really good. I really enjoyed that a lot. Very interesting time in the sport. We talked a lot about TV deals, PGI did in general, and potential shifts that were happening with all these chess pieces moving around on the board. And boy, we had no idea really what was to come, did we? So we talked about UFC on Versus with a little bit of a preview there. Nate Marquardt, Spike was countering a UFC on Versus show with a Nate Marquardt marathon, go figure. So we'll talk about that. Very interesting now to think of anyone putting on a Nate Marquardt marathon to try to counter-program your partner. It's weird stuff. So we talked about that. And also a young upstart, Matt Mitrione, and how UFC was really kind of bringing him along slowly, doing it the right way. And it was really interesting I think Matt Mitrione, he having just knocked out Fedor several weeks ago for Bellator, coincidentally enough, I think it's going to be interesting once his career is all said and done. I think we're going to look back and be like, wow, he got every single drop possible out of that career. Having started when he did, the career in football, and I think he had one amateur fight before he went into the Tough House. And you know, he may never win a heavyweight title. Who knows what Bellator is going to do with that. But he is he's an interesting story and a guy that really didn't – I don't think anyone really expected a lot out of and then got every single drop out of his career. And he's still going. So we talk a little about this young guy back then. So it's interesting. 6 years ago and Matt Mitrione is still going. So I think it's a fun addition to the show. Enjoy the Bjorn Rebney interview for sure. And thanks for joining me. Let's get to the June 23rd, 2011 edition of the WJM MMA show on JNPO Classic.
You're at the starting line of another hour of New Hampshire's best sports on WJAM, The Game.
It's Thursday, June 23rd. The WJAM MMA show is live. Josh Nason, PJ Hewitt here. Another crank and stove show from start to finish. It would help if my script did not go down just as I was about to start talking. But it's live radio, friends. PJ, what's going on tonight, brother?
Good evening, Josh. Yeah, amidst the NBA draft we have going on in the background here on the TV.
Yeah, it's a busy night.
Cleveland Cavaliers have selected a couple picks already.
Oh, good. Good, good. Because I was wondering, you know, kind of what was going to be going on with them. And
Tristan Thompson at number four, the last pick so far.
Should we just do, NBA draft covers the whole
Yeah, for the first segment at least. Yeah, just where will Kemba Walker go?
Oh, boy. We got a lot to talk about tonight. You're going to talk about USC on versus four coming up this Sunday. Strikeforce Overeem versus Verdum happened this past Saturday.
Did it ever?
PG has some thoughts on that.
Yeah.
There's not really a lot of straggling news tonight, which has not been the norm if you've been friends with us here on the show. And we also have not one, but two big interviews. We have Bjorn Rebney, Bellator CEO, coming up in segment two. And the final segment of the night, we're going to talk with a man that's fighting on UFC on Versus 4, John Howard, guy from Boston, Massachusetts. Our first show, PJ, with not one, but two guests.
It's going to be really fun tonight. John Howard is a guy who's been in the studio before, so I've had a chance to meet him. He's a really good guy, besides just being a Boston guy. And his back's up against the wall, as his opponent, Matt Brown. John Howard has lost his last two fights in the UFC. Brown has lost his last three. Usually guys lose three in a row in the UFC, they get cut. So I would assume that both these fighters, especially Brown, fighting for their UFC lives.
No doubt about it. So let's actually talk a little about UFC on Versus 4 coming up this Sunday. Free TV, it's a very busy weekend of MMA. Three nights and three events, and I cannot remember for the life of me if that's ever happened before. I know there's been obviously some weekends where there's been obviously a UFC event going head to head with Strikeforce, UFC and Bellator, or so on. But this is it's a lot. Three nights, three events. Kicks off Friday night with Strikeforce Challengers, emanating live from Kent, Washington. Then on Saturday we have Bellator. We just talked about the summer series kicks off. And then obviously we have USC versus Force. So let's start with that. Headlined by Nate Marquardt versus friend of the show, Rick Story. Main event. And really, this is going to be, it's interesting because it's 170 pounds. Nate Marquardt's debut at 170, taking on Rick Story, who's coming on this fight on short notice. Anthony Johnson was supposed to fight Nate Marquardt, and he got hurt. Marquardt, Rick Story, what are you thinking?
Well, before that, Rick Story's last fight against Thiago Alves, I said that this could be a statement fight for him. And after his win, I said that, well, you know, the UFC might be looking to put him up against some higher talent now. He's beginning to prove himself. And that night, as we were on the air, they did. They announced that he'd be fighting Nate Marquardt. And, you know, I asked for it and I got it. You know, they upped his talent level as far as his opponent goes for Rick Story. But this is going to be a really good fight, and I think this is going to be fight of the night. And
wow, that's a bold call.
It is, and I know Nate Marquardt, they're really pushing him right now. I think they have like Nate Marquardt's best fights is going to be on TV this week leading up on Saturday night.
It's not just going to be on TV. It's going to be opposing the broadcast.
It's going to be opposing.
Yeah, so here's
Spike TV. Is it Spike TV that it's on?
Yeah, well, we'll talk a little bit about the whole MMA on TV deal with Bjorn in a second segment. But so here's the deal. So The events on Versus is going to be a pre-show and a post-show, which I think is really cool. It really gives it kind of that live event feel. The event starts, I believe, at 9 o'clock on Versus, so free TV. And Spike is going to essentially counter-program the UFC, their partner, with essentially a Nate Marquardt marathon for all the day, I think, running up through the event. So they're showing like a UFC Unleashed with Nate Marquardt. And they're showing all these different fights. It's like, what?
Why would you do that? Why would you go up against it?
Well, the funny thing is no offense to Nate Marquardt, he's not like a box office draw.
No.
So the last person I would ever think that they would do a marathon on would be Nate Marquardt. You know what I mean? It's weird.
Yeah, and you look at his last couple fights. I mean, Nate's a very, very good fighter, very tough fighter. His last win, you know, his last big win was against Damian Maia back in 2009. He fought Chael Sonnen after that and lost. Sonnen went on to fight Anderson Silva after that. He won against a guy I can't even pronounce his name.
Uzmar Pal-Harris.
Yeah. Thank you very much.
That was a quick knockout win. He looked really good in that fight.
Yes.
It was really quick.
That was a UFC fight night where he was featured and he was the headline fight of that. And then went on and lost to Yushin Okami. Yushin Okami now going on to fight Anderson Silva. Mm-hmm. And then a unanimous decision win over Dan Miller, who, if you look at and I was, when I was doing the research here, Dan Miller has lost 4 out of his last 6 fights. So not someone who's really tearing it up, you know, and then 4 of his last 6 UFC fights. So I don't know. It seems like every time he gets up to gets up there where he's just going to try to fight for a contender title or a contender spot. Mm-hmm. It seems like he hasn't come through.
What'll be interesting about this, his welterweight debut, like we mentioned, 170 pounds, how he deals with the weight cut will be important. Cause he was a muscular 185.
Yeah.
So now to see how that translates down to 170 would be important, but you're right. Every time he's kind of get up there in the UFC level, I mean, he's had a title shot before, against Anderson Silva. This is back in 2007. He's been in the UFC a long time. So
his debut was Ken Shamrock's last fight in the UFC. That's how long he's been in there.
And so he's got to that point. He's been close. He fought against Chael Sonnen, you mentioned, February 2006. Sonnen decimated him, took him down, ground him out. And Sonnen was a decided underdog going into that fight. And then Sonnen obviously went on to a fight of the night, a fight of the year candidate with Anderson Silva. And now that he's dropping down a weight, Marquardt, this is a shot because, like we talked about before, 170 pounds needs some contenders in there, and he's got a shot.
Yeah, and apparently it came on the suggestion of George St. Pierre, who he trains with, uh-huh, up in Montreal, or at Arizona right now. Because George St. Pierre trains in both. He trains in Montreal.
He trains all over the place.
Yeah, he trains in Montreal. Yeah.
Marquardt trains a lot in Colorado as well.
Yep.
But yeah, there's a lot of some crossing over with camps, with the Jackson camp and Faraz. Yeah, they definitely are training partners at some part of the world.
Yeah, so apparently, from what I read, George St. Pierre suggested, oh, why don't you bump down to 170? And then, like you said, he was a big 185 or muscular 185 to begin with. You see a lot of UFC fighters now dropping down in weight classes, especially in those lighter weight classes with the addition of the featherweights and the bantamweights. But you're seeing a lot of them drop down, the guys who are kind of just not really struggling but can't really seem to put 3-4 wins in a row. Mm-hmm. You know, they'll win 2 or 3 and then they'll lose 1 and they drop back down. So it'll be interesting to see. You mentioned the weight cut. How does he deal with that? Now, Rick Story is a guy who we talked to a few weeks ago, and he's looking more and more impressive every fight. He fought Thiago Alves and won handily, you know, didn't really blow him out, didn't win all 3 rounds, but did very well in that fight. And he's got another fight to prove himself. And you think now if he ends up beating Nate Marquardt, he's not too far away. I would say probably two fights at the most away from and wins away from earning a championship fight.
Co-main event of the night, Czech Congo versus Pat Barry. Two guys that like to slug. Congo needs a win. He really needs to look impressive. Pat Barry, he's one of those guys that's floating around that middle tier in terms of heavyweights, not exactly regarded as a title threat. However, he gets on a nice run. He could put himself in contention. Czech Congo, Pat Barry, what do you think?
Well, Czech Congo's a guy that, you know, he has the look of someone who should be very, very dominant, but he really, really hasn't been. He's one of those guys I think had a lot of hype when he came into the UFC and never really fully lived up to it. Just, you know, when you think he's going to start to do a little bit better, you know, he won his first 2 fights in the UFC, then lost. Won his next 2, then lost. Won his next 3, then lost 2. Won his next 1, and then, of course, the draw against Travis Brown, where he had a point taken away because he was holding on to his shorts, and he would have won that fight, too. So I think Czech Congo, he's one of those guys that it's hit or miss sometimes.
It's hit or miss.
He can look really good, and then he can just look awful.
I think every fighter, they get to a point where they get the big test, right? And I think you look at Congo's career, his real big test was Cain Velasquez when he fought him back at UFC 99, and he lost a decision. He had him down early in that fight. If anyone goes back and watched that, he caught him with some shots, and Cain dropped. But Cain recovered, and he's obviously won the fight and has gone on to do great things. But then Frank Mir, he looked horrendous. And so that was a chance where if he was going to come back in his next fight and really make a good effort, it was going to be against Mir, and he did not do that. So now...
Yeah, I got choked out in about a minute, just over a minute in that fight.
So now you kind of look at Czech Congo like, you kind of know what he is. Essentially, he's in the dreaded gatekeeper role, unless he went on an amazing tear, but I doubt that's going to happen. So Pat Barry, on the flip side of things, a guy's intense kickboxing background, someone that has great training partners, trains with Matt Mitrione, also on the card as well. Still pretty young in his MMA career. He's only fought 8 times. Last beat Joey Beltran. Obviously had a loss against Mirko Krokop. But talk a little bit about what you see with Pat Barry.
Oh, Pat Barry, I you know, he used to mention his, you know, he's got a very good kickboxing background. Mm-hmm. He's one of these guys that, you know, he's only 6-2. He's still kind of on the way up. He's 31 years old, but, you know, I think this might be his biggest test so far. Like you said, he lost to Krokop, but Krokop's really, it's not the Krokop of,
right,
you know, 3-4 years ago and or beyond that.
Yeah.
One against Joey Beltran, who, if you look at it, besides his last wins, besides Joey Beltran, his fights in the UFC, Dan Evenson, no longer in the UFC, and Anthony Hardonk, no longer
retired.
Yeah.
And then Tim Haig.
And then Tim Haig.
Tough Canadian Tim Haig.
So, yeah, it'll be interesting. I don't know. I think Congo should handle Pat Barry, unless Pat Barry comes out and just, you know, on fire, but I don't necessarily see that happening.
Actually, we didn't even predict the fights yet. We could get you at the end of the show.
All right.
We'll do it at the end of the show, so stick around for that, folks.
All right, well, a little tease there for I took Chuck Congo in this fight.
We'll talk about, now I'm going to have to pick the opposite. Matt Brown versus John Howard, we'll actually talk about that in the last segment as well. So we have John Howard coming up in our final segment. Before the break, let's talk real quick. Matt Mitrione, Christian Moorcraft. Mitrione is a really interesting fighter and a guy that I'm fascinated with. He was on the Ultimate Fighter season 10, nicknamed Meathead, really just came across as so unlikable and such an irritant. He gets out of the house, kind of says, well, it was mostly a character, and he's gone on a tear, and he's the most personable guy you ever want to talk to, and he's undefeated right now in the UFC.
He
hadn't fought before he went in the house.
Had one amateur fight,
yeah,
going into the house, and that was it. And then started his pro career in the UFC, which extremely rare. And he's a guy, as an MMA fan, and watching him on The Ultimate Fighter, absolutely hated him. That stupid little grin, smirk that he has,
uh-huh,
you just root for someone to knock it off, but no one's been able to do that so far against him. You know, we said 4-0. I talked about guys who are no longer in the UFC, fought Marcus Jones, who was also on The Ultimate Fighter with him.
That was a quick, I mean, that was a pretty dominant fight.
Yeah. And then Marcus Jones retired after that, then fought Kimbo Slice next. Mm-hmm. Kimbo Slice left the UFC, wanted to focus on his boxing career. I haven't really been keeping up with Kimbo Slice. I don't know if he's had any boxing fights.
No, you hear his name float around again, but yeah, nothing really with Kimbo.
And then Joey Beltran, who is in the UFC. And Tim Haig.
Common opponents.
So I am really, really rooting for, maybe impartially rooting for Christian Moorcraft.
Oh, listen to you. Here's what I like about Mitrione. I like how the UFC has just brought him along slowly. And sometimes it's difficult because of their roster depth with I'd say, younger fighters, inexperienced fighters. Because they have so many guys that are experienced, it's tough to find good opponents. And guys are qualified to actually fight in the octagon. But they found that with Mitrione. They found guys that are his level and sometimes just a little bit ahead, and he's beating these guys. And he's still, the thing is, Mitrione played in the NFL a little bit. He's a former New York Giant, and also played a little bit. Nothing notable in terms of career accomplishments in football.
At the Vikings as well.
Right. So he started MMA a little bit late in his career. So it's kind of, you know, I think is he 30? How old is he? He's like
Mitrione?
Yeah, 30.
He's 32.
32.
Yep.
So 32 is usually the age that guys are kind of start that crest down. But since he really hasn't fought a lot, it's kind of unique where you really don't know where he's at. And every, he just keeps winning. So this would be a nice test for him. Christian Moorcraft is a guy that is, I don't know a ton about him. These guys been
he's
around.
Big.
He's a big
yeah,
dude.
6'6", 260 listed at. So
I'm trying to bring up my notes here. He's a guy. It's again kind of relatively young his UFC career. 7-1. Last beat Sean McCorkle. Second round of UFC Fight Night back in March.
Yep.
He's lost to the skyscraper Stefan Struve, and this will be his third tilt in the octagon. So. A big opportunity for him. If he can knock off Mitrione, that'd be a nice feather in his cap.
Yeah, quick side note. His last fight before entering the UFC and taking that fight against Stefan Struve, fought and beat Lee Bean, who we saw.
The Beast!
The Beast, who we saw fight Dan the Beast Severn not too long ago. So a little connection there. But yeah, he's very big, very young. Very young, 24 years old. So. Mm-hmm. He's got a very big career ahead of him if he's able to stay successful. And, you know, his size, he can be very marketable.
So we'll take our first break of the evening. We didn't even get to Strikeforce. We'll try to get that a little bit later. PAC show, Bellator CEO Bjorn Remney coming up next. This is the MMA Show on New Hampshire's ESPN Radio, WGAM, The Game. And welcome back to the WGAM MMA Show. And really psyched, our guest at this time is the CEO of Bellator Fighting Championships, kicks off their summer series this Saturday night on MTV2. Happy to talk tonight with Bjorn Remney. Bjorn, how are you tonight?
I'm doing really good. Thank you guys for having me on.
Hey, thanks for joining us. The MMA Show, this is our first CEO that we've talked to, so it's a historic night for us.
Very cool. I'm in good company.
Very good. Well, let's talk about the summer series, and it kicks off this Saturday night, as we mentioned. It's a little unique, because usually, for those that are obviously familiar with Bellator, and for those that aren't, you do a tournament format. Traditionally, it's week to week to week. The summer series is a little bit different, where you're doing one event every month, starting this Saturday. Talk a little bit about this kind of unique format for you.
Yeah, you know, we've got two full seasons going in calendar year 2011. That's 12 weeks straight, which is enough to make anybody's hair fall out and look like mine. So what we tried to do is kind of fill the gap in between those two full seasons, and the best way to do that was pick one weight class where we were just stacked with talent, where we had just great depth and world-class fighters above and beyond the initial eight, and do a summer series. Do a one event in June, one event in July, and one event in August, and ultimately, you know, crown ourselves another tournament champion at 145, and whoever wins this tournament is going to earn the right to fight the winner of Pitbull versus Warren, which, of course, takes place in July up in Toronto. And, you know, very exciting tournament. Some just rock star featherweights in this tournament. Can't wait for Saturday night.
So these three events are really going to be featherweight centric then.
Yeah, they're going to be hugely featherweight centric. But then, of course, you know, as we get through the quarterfinal round and we get into the semis, then you'll see the Warren Pitbull fight up there, which is, of course, again, featherweight centric. You'll also see probably a Neil Grove fight, bringing our heavyweight back, who challenged Cole Conrad for our heavyweight title about 9 months ago. And then in the last event of the season, you'll see the featherweight final up at Mohegan Sun in Connecticut, but you'll also see a heavyweight matchup, Paul the Headhunter Buntello versus Cole Conrad. You'll see some other great fights that'll round out that TV portion of the show. So every time we kick off a season, we've got 2 hours to do a show. You can only get really four TV fights in a two-hour block. So anytime we're in the quarterfinal round, man, it's just going to be featherweights top to bottom, and a Saturday night show is going to be should be electrifying on that front.
So one of the unique aspects of Bellator, and really I'd say the most unique aspect of the whole promotion, is that you do the tournament format. And I think it's one of those things that I've heard you talk in interviews before where you said you want to be different than the UFC. You want to be different than Strikeforce and the other products that are out there. I mean, already we're going to be entering, I believe, the fourth season, if I'm right, later on in the fall. But talk about the tournament format, how it's gone, and just overall the positives of it and some of the difficulties you've run into as well.
Yeah, we're kicking off season five. We just finished up season four, our first season with MTV2 as part of this new great MTV Networks alliance. But when I was conceptualizing it, when I was coming up with the format, the whole idea for the business and what was going to make us unique and different, it wasn't so much that we were going out of our way to be different from Strikeforce or the WEC or Elite XE or IFL or all the other groups who were around at the time. It was more so just a matter of fairness. It was a matter of looking at the NCAAs in basketball or the NFL or NBA or Major League Baseball or the NHL or, you know, tennis at a high level, whatever your chosen sport, the best play the best, and ultimately at the end, the one who wins the most ends up as the champion. It doesn't matter whether it's March Madness in basketball or NFL or any other sport. It's the competition and the performance on the field, on the rink, on the court, that ultimately determines who becomes number one. And I looked at fighting sports and I was like, wait a second. There's a subjective wizard sitting behind a huge curtain making a decision as to who fights who, when, and for what. And that's just not, that in my mind, and you know, I'm the first to admit some people may disagree with me, but in my mind that wasn't fair. I didn't want to watch another fight and see a guy bruised and battered and beaten over three rounds or five rounds, and ultimately at the end of it he's declared the winner and he looks for the promoter in the crowd and begs for a shot at the title. It just was a disconnect to me. It didn't make any sense. It was like, well, wait a minute, if you win and you beat everybody, you should ultimately get your shot at the title, and if you win that fight, you should be the champion, just like every other sport we've watched since we were kids. So that's where the genesis came from. It was, you know, man, I'm a fan of the UFC. I watched the UFC for years. Man, I used to watch Hoist Gracie in a gi fighting 300-pound guys. But it just it seemed inherently fair to me to set up a tournament format that was based on objectivity, win and move on, lose and go home. And it's kind of where it all came from.
Now, Bjorn, you mentioned this past season, season four for Bellator, was your first on MTV2. Tell me what went into the decision to partner up with MTV2, and also, if you could, explain your thoughts of how you think the season went.
Well, you know, the thought process in partnering up with MTV Networks and finding a home on MTV2 was simple. And I've used this analogy before. If you were going to try to become the best basketball player in the world, it'd probably be a good idea to spend a lot of time around Michael Jordan. You know, if you were going to go into the hockey arena, you'd probably want to spend an amazing amount of time around Gretzky. If you're going to try to build a brand in the mixed martial arts space, and you're going to try to put on great shows and promote, market, and advertise your brand and your company the most effective way possible, the best guys you could hope to partner with would be the team at MTV Networks, because MTV Networks owns a pretty well-known and popular television station called Spike, and they've done an amazing job there generating huge awareness and crossover for what I believe is the greatest sport in the world, mixed martial arts. So when the decision had to be made as to where we would go long term and where we would spend the next number of years with this company and where we would try to grow this brand, it was an easy decision to make. You know, you had people out there who had an incredible proven track record of knocking the ball out of the park in the mixed martial arts space, and that's where the decision came from. You know, I mean, and in terms of what went well last season, I think things got tighter, the production got better, the show got stickier, it became a more fluid and better program to watch. But the thing that I'm most proud of is the qualitative level of the fighters. You look across all of our weight divisions now, 45 is just rock solid stacked, 35 is just going to be a murderer's row when our new tournament kicks off. Welterweight has just got great fighter after great fighter. I mean, lightweight, you got Alvarez as our champion, you got Chandler as the challenger, Patricky Pitbull, and the list goes on. So I mean, I think that if I look back on anything from season four in the last probably 6 months in this company's growth, it's just that the qualitative level of the world-class fighters fighting under this banner has just gotten bigger and better and stronger.
We're on with the CEO of Bellator Fighting Championships, Bjorn Rebney, on the WGAM MMA show. And, you know, it's funny you mentioned Spike, because there's been a lot of talk about TV recently. I don't know if you've have heard any of this. But obviously, you're in the first year of a new deal with MTV2, and you talked a lot of great things about that. And obviously, I would agree that, yeah, the production's got better. The show, it's been a great partner. It's been consistent, which I think is obviously a huge thing. There's been a lot of chatter about UFC moving away from Spike, going towards Versus, and obviously a lot of rumors about Bellator then moving in, potentially on Spike TV. And obviously, I'm obviously can't speak specifically to anything, but just the idea or all this chatter, I'm sure it's got your attention.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's hard to miss it. You know, I mean, it's one thing for those of us who are always looking at, you know, whether it's Junkie or SureDog or Weekly or whatever it is. I mean, it shows up there, but when it starts being on the pages of the Wall Street Journal and the New York Times, you're going to see it. But, you know, I mean, the reality is there's a lot of different rumors and ideas and concepts going on out there. And, you know, with 27 live, free, nationally televised events on MTV2 this year and another 27 next year, you know, it's all I can do to get 3 to 4 hours sleep a night. So, you know, I mean, I'm hyper-focused on working on our production, signing the next Patricky Pitbull, Mike Chandler, you know, putting the show together, formatting things, shooting feature pieces. We've been down in Florida for the last 4 days with all of our fighters coming in early, shooting a great new set of feature pieces and stories behind the fighters for our event. So it's just, you know, I leave the rumors for the media and for that side of it, and I just kind of focus on putting together the best possible shows we can put together and hope we can keep hitting the ball out of the park in some of the ratings numbers with MTV2 like we did on the last couple shows last season.
I tell you what, we do love breaking news on this show, and you mentioned earlier you're coming to Mohegan Sun in August, and I was at the last event, Eddie Alvarez, tremendous win, great atmosphere. One of the things that I think that anyone that's never been to a Bellator event, that you really encapsulate that live event atmosphere, especially in some of these smaller venues, and just the way that the arena's dressed and all that stuff, I'd recommend anyone go. But there's been some rumors that Eddie Alvarez might return and compete on that card against Michael Chandler. Anything you can tell us tonight?
That would be music to my ears, brother, because, you know, I love watching Eddie Alvarez fight, you know, as much as any mixed martial artist out there in the game today. Mike Chandler, a lot of people didn't recognize it, but in Mike Chandler's first fight against Marcin Held, he got trapped in a leg lock that 99.9% of the people on earth would have tapped to get out of. He didn't, but it left him a little bit torqued when it came to that rehab on that leg. And he was able to make it through, and he was able to win two spectacular fights, an unbelievable stand-up war that he won against Patricky Pitbull. But he needed some time to get that leg back under him and get back to the kind of pace and the kind of training he needed to get to face what I believe is the best lightweight in the world, Nettie. So it does not look as though we're going to be able to do that fight on that show. Just from a timing perspective, it's just too soon for Chandler relative to being 100%. And anybody, you know, I mean, I don't mean to blow up Eddie, but anybody who thinks they can come in anything less than 110% against Eddie Alvarez is probably in for a really short night. So, you know, God bless Mike, and I hope he's rocking and rolling. I know I keep in touch with his all his people and his management pretty regularly, and he seems to be back on track, but I think August would be a little bit of a quick clip for him to get back in to face Ed.
So one of the interesting things I've always found fascinating about your job is securing free agents. And obviously with more and more guys becoming names out there, just due to the vast amount of MMA that's on TV, guys can become notable names, stars, and so on. I'm always interested in asking you about how you go about looking and evaluating free agents and what you specifically look for guys to come into to Bellator, specifically thinking about guys like Ben Saunders and a guy like Jay Heron.
Yeah, you know, we've kind of had a philosophy at Bellator where, because of the frequency of our programming, because of, you know, how often we have fights, and because of how quickly somebody can go from unknown to star under this banner, because of, you know, 3 fights, 3 months, national television for every one, fighting every 30 days, we really try to kind of focus on building up our own guys, you know, the Eddie Alvarezes, the Hector Lombards, the Joe Warrens, the Ben Askrens, the Zach Mikoskis, the Patricio Pitbulls, the Patricky Pitbulls. Those have been, that's where all our energy has gone. But, you know, I'm a fan of the game first and foremost. So, like, every time I saw Ben Saunders step into the cage in the UFC, I wanted to watch more Ben Saunders. And when he got released, it kind of struck me like, wow, that's a weird release. You know, there's some guys that get released from the UFC or get released from Bellator or get released from Strikeforce. You say to yourself, that makes sense. I can understand. He's got to go kind of regroup, maybe spend a year getting some wind under his belt. But when Saunders got released, I was like, whoa, I would love to see that guy fight again and quick. And I've got a company and I can make that happen. So it was an immediate reach out to his team to go, wait a minute, we'd love to have that guy fighting here. He's great to watch fight. All knees, all elbows, all moving forward in action every time he steps into the cage. And then a guy like Jay, I've been a fan of Jay Heron's for years. And I just watched kind of in, you know, it was disappointing to watch him sit with Strikeforce and not do anything for an extended period. You know, his big fight was like an online show that was streamed before a show that never made it, and the online went down, and it was just disappointing because I kept looking at him and going, man, that's a world-class welterweight who really deserves his shot. And all Jay wanted was just an opportunity to not have anyone, to have no politics, have no golden boys, just literally to step up and say, look, give me a shot to win. If I win, I'm there. If I don't win, forget it. I'll step away. So, you know, fortunately, we were able to get Jay signed as well, and look what he did, you know?
The man is CEO Bjorn Remney, the organization Bellator Fighting Championships. This Saturday night, MTV2, the summer series, kicks off. Featherweights, if you like action, watch it. Bjorn, thank you so much. Good luck with the summer season, and good luck with the fall season. Love to talk to you again sometime.
All right. Thanks for having me on, guys.
Might be the best interview, I'd say, of the year.
I think CEOs like to talk.
They do.
Yeah.
I like to talk, too, so it's a good showdown.
That was good. No, you know, Bjorn was great, gave us a lot of information, didn't break the news that you were hoping he would break to you, but...
And we ran the interview anyway. How dare we? you know what? It sounds like a cliche. I literally could have talked to him for another 10 minutes. I have so many other questions to ask. I want to ask him about Ben Askren, because Ben Askren made some comments recently about not being able to fight the best and want to fight in the UFC in order to get to that spot, and Bjorn actually talked to him about that. And Ben had some comments about that. So there was some interesting things there. The free agent discussion was very interesting. I wanted to ask him about that specifically because I've always said for some of these other organizations that They got to get guys that people know, especially if they're trying to meet, reach mainstream fans. But there's always like this, there's always this going back and forth between building your own stars, but also infusing those with names that people know. It's kind of like the pro wrestling model. I know a lot of people hate the comparisons, but they exist. So finding guys that people know, be like, oh, a Ben Saunders is fighting, for example, or a, I also want to say, for example, say, well, for example, you mentioned Paul Biondello, guy that mainstream fans aren't going to know Paul Biondello, but hardcore fans know he's been around forever. And certain guys like that. I was always interested in hearing like, what do they look for? Cause if I was running an organization, and obviously I don't, cause I'm sitting here, but I would look for guys that people knew and, you know, like a Marcus Davis, for example, a guy that got cut from the UFC. He fought recently in Canada, and could that be a guy that Bjorn looks at, or is he a little older? You know, what's the risk reward, the benefit of getting a guy like that over, say, a guy like Michael Chandler's in a different weight class and giving him an opportunity in a tournament? So I know that you're kind of still new to the Bellator scene. What would you prefer to see?
I obviously like when they bring name fighters in, because it helps draw people in, obviously. Mm-hmm. So it works in that way. And then while you say, oh, well, I'm going to tune into this fight to see this fighter, I might see a guy who, oh, now I'm really impressed by this guy. Now I know who he is. Mm-hmm. So now the next time he fights, I'm going to tune in to watch him. So I think it only helps to bring those guys in. You have to pick and choose, I think, and be selectful. Sometimes you can't just say, oh, the UFC cut this guy, we have to go get him.
Right.
Because if he's losing three fights there, you know, he might not be the best to bring in.
Right.
Unless he's just a big name. But I think it helps. I'm glad to see it. And, you know, asked him about the MTV2 partnership and brought up Spike TV, did Bjorn Rebney.
Yeah, unprompted.
Unprompted and kind of and weaved his way into it. You know, got you to ask that question, you know, just in case the UFC leaves, are you setting up to do? And I think he didn't tell us that, but I think with this partnership, it'll only lead to that.
Yeah, it's interesting how this whole thing plays out is going to be, for the MMA industry, this is pretty important, because not only you're going to see the rights fees that the UFC gets, which will be probably the most intriguing part, is really how much are they worth on TV. If there's a network component, if they do go the versus route, there's talk about them having shows on NBC. And if they have shows on NBC, essentially they have to remove pay-per-views, because NBC is not going to say, hey, let's just put on any little fight night. They still view themselves, obviously, in a network. So you're going to have a network-style event. So you're going to have to pull essentially a pay-per-view main event and put it on network TV if that happens. So how that whole thing plays out, how the advertising
and I think
plays
that,
in that.
That could work out, too, if you have a set amount of fights for a year, you know, two,
sure,
three, four fights on NBC,
sure,
a year. They might not get the pay-per-view money that they were hoping for or that they like. But
they may get something bigger, which is mainstream viewers.
Right.
And that's really where we're at in the business right now. They've got us. They need to get the mainstream people who are teetering a little bit and who need an excuse to turn it on and be like, I want to see this. This is awesome. And they can't, if they're going to put something on network TV, they have to bring it with a card.
Yeah.
Like a really strong, like I'm talking like a title fight, something like that, that the mainstream viewer who has been wanting to quote unquote, try this UFC stuff, they get it. Like they have to, that's their chance to hook these people in. And that's obviously a big deal. So how that plays out will be interesting. Bellator is in a good position. They're a really good position because they put out a quality product. And while it may not be the most notable in terms of names like, you know, Randy Couture or Chuck Liddell, but they don't have that legacy. They put out entertaining fights. The production, like Bjorn mentioned, and I'm not just saying this because he talked to us, the production's tight. It's really tight. And when it comes back to Mohegan Sun in August, I would suggest people go, because I went there to cover an event and I was like, this is great. It's just, they do this, you know, it's a smaller venue, but they make it seem like it's not so small, I guess. It's a major league production, and they try and they put in the effort, and that, you know, there's a lot of other organizations that don't do that. So yeah, Bellator, I would suggest that, you know, they're in a good spot where they've got the exposure now on MTV2 as far as running a regular schedule. People can see them. If they move into that spike position, that's even more viewers they can have. And there's a rumor that there's the idea or the concept I've heard is if Bellator was to move to Spike, if this whole thing was to happen, they would be put on a weeknight. Probably realistically like Wednesday night, because you're not going to put them on Thursdays because they obviously have it. They have a wrestling product now. They're going to avoid putting on the Friday, Saturday, Sunday. So weeknight would make a lot of sense like they used to.
And it would definitely help build a brand, and that's only good for the sport.
Absolutely. We go to the next break?
Yeah, we can take a break.
That's right, because we final segment of the show, we have so much more to talk about. We're actually going to talk to UFC 170-pounder John Howard from Boston, Massachusetts. He's going to be calling us from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, as he prepares for a fight this Sunday night. Coming up real quick, you're listening to the WGAM MMA show on WGAM Sports Radio, The Game. Welcome back. Final segment, WGAM MMA show. We are on the line with a guy that, he's a bad man. He's a very bad man, a very good fighter. This Sunday night, he takes on Matt Brown on the televised portion of UFC on Versus 4. It's Boston, Massachusetts native John Howard. John, what's going on tonight?
Chilling, man. How you doing?
Things are good. You big fight, as we just talked about. Matt Brown coming up this Sunday night, and tough guy. He's got coming off three losses in a row. They put this on the televised card for a reason. Are you expecting a pretty tough fight?
Yeah, I expect a real tough fight, man. I expect the fight of the night, man. He's a good striker, man. I'm a good striker, so we're gonna bang it out, you know, see who has the biggest fist.
What type of things have you been training for specifically with Matt?
Man, it's just 6 hours of training, man. Constantly striking, hitting pads, and just going over scenarios.
Okay, so yourself, you know, you had obviously a really long winning streak coming on this losing two in a row. Do you feel this is a must-win fight for you?
In a way it does, man, because having two losses in a row doesn't look good. You only as good as your last fight, man. So it's not necessarily a must-win situation, but it is a situation that I prefer I win.
So you know, when fighters go on, they lose a couple fights in a row, or you know, they always kind of go back to the drawing board. But obviously, you had a ton of success going into those you know, those past few fights. Have you been changing any things up in you know, your training regimen? Any new things you've been working on, or is it tough to kind of abandon that whole game plan and start from scratch again?
No, man, it's just a bad look sometimes, man, and wrong opponents at certain times. But, you know, I didn't really abandon nothing. I changed my game plan up for anything. I added to my reservoir, and that's about it, man. So, you know, it's going to be a better fight now.
So tell them about the audience a little bit about yourself. You've been obviously a Boston guy, been fighting in New England for a while, got your shot in the UFC. Kind of talk about the New England MMA scene and kind of getting your big shot in the UFC.
The New England MMA scene is kind of hard, man, because it's like a grappler-based city, and there's a lot of stuff you can't do. We just now got sanctioned not that long ago to throw elbows and knees to the face stuff, so it was kind of hard when I was coming up because it wasn't sanctioned then. It was hard, man, but, you know, I got my opportunity, and when I got it, I just took it, man, and got good results from it.
Now, before you had got your shot in the UFC, obviously, you fought the IFL a little bit, Ring of Combat. Do you remember where you were when you first got the call that you were going to go fight in the octagon?
Yes, I was supposed to fight in New Jersey in a Ring of Combat fight, and a friend of a friend called me and told me, what was I doing for one of the UFC fights? I was like, oh, I'm probably going to watch it. He's like, no, you're going to watch it live. I said, really? How is that? Because you're fighting in it. So I was so excited, man. It was awesome, man.
And that was your UFC debut. That was January 31st, 2009, UFC 94. You won Fight of the Night, your first fight out.
Correct, yeah, man. It was good times, man.
So, you're coming off that win, and just, I guess, for people that obviously will never fight and compete in that level, I mean, that just must have been a dream come true at that point. You've been obviously fighting for a few years. And tell us about that feeling that you had when you're standing up there and you're like, I just won a UFC fight.
It's the greatest feeling in the world, man. I can't believe that to be in the UFC and to win the UFC fight is another accomplishment, man. So I was really amazed and proud that I did it, man. It was a big accomplishment for me in my life.
Talking to John Howard, he competes against Matt Brown this Sunday night, UFC on Versus 4. Now, John, I know that you're a huge Boston sports fan. Anyone that follows your Twitter knows that. What'd you think about the Bruins winning?
Man, I'm so proud of the Bruins, man. Our Boston athletes are the best athletes they have, man. And I say to everybody, man, you could never count out a Boston athlete because we got hearts, man. And the hearts are of gold, man. And we keep going. We never quit, man. And Boston Bruins is the great example of that.
So, I mean, obviously, right now, the the Red Sox are tearing it up. The Patriots, you know, might be in a lockout, but obviously they've had a huge success. The Bruins, Celtics. What's your favorite sport to watch, and who's your favorite Boston athlete?
I like to watch the Celtics, man. It's between Kevin Garnett and Big Baby. I love watching those guys, man. Big Baby is hilarious, man. I know him personally. He's so funny, man. And Garnett, man, he got the skills, man. So it's my favorite sports to watch. But, you know, being a Boston guy, I love all my Boston athletes and Boston sports, man. So I watch them all, definitely.
Now, Big Baby Davis, you just mentioned, he is a huge UFC fan. Have you had the chance to meet him before?
Yeah, actually, I got a chance to meet him, chill with him, train him before, man. So he's good people, man. He's real athletic, man. He is kind of big, but, you know, I moved around with him. He's not that bad, man. He surprised me a lot.
So you said you've actually trained with him?
Yeah, he came to Y Crew, which is a school in Boston, man, and come train at my school a few times, and it was a good experience, man. I had fun.
Yeah, because he has a little bit of a kickboxing background in terms of training and things like that. Did he throw any high kicks at you that he surprised you?
Yeah, man. He has really hard kicks, man. Holding pads with him is not fun sometimes because he, at the time, he was like 260. And when he throws a kick, man, it hurts, man. So that boy knows what he's doing.
Now, wrapping up here with John Howard. Now, being a Boston guy, and right now you're in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, correct?
Yep.
So it's not exactly known as being very Boston sports fan friendly. Have you had any hostile Steelers fans or anything like that come over and say anything to you?
Not really, man. I haven't really met any fans here, not like that. That was crazy like that. But I got to say for the Pittsburgh, man, we do share the same colors, man, black and yellow, man. So, you know, your black and yellow is football, our black and yellow is hockey, man. And we just came out of the big win, man. So you got to give us props, man.
So I definitely think good luck is on your side because recently, you know, Kenny Florian went up to Vancouver when the Bruins were there, pulled off a victory in enemy territory. The Red Sox are actually playing in Pittsburgh this weekend, and you happen to be there. So I think there are going to be some good things for you this Sunday night.
I think so too, man. I think a lot of stuff is in my favor for this fight, man, so I'm really excited.
Well, before we let you go, I'll give you the opportunity to plug any social media, Twitter, Facebook, any sponsors you like, and give them some love.
Thank you, man. I want to, for all the fans out there, you can catch me on John Howard UFC, Facebook, regular, just put up John Howard. I want to say thank you to Y Crew. Thank you to the UFC. Thank you to Team Grudge. That's my new sister gym that I join now. And to all my fans, always, here comes the doom.
This Sunday night, he takes on Matt Brown, UFC on Versus 4, John Howard. John, good luck this weekend, and good luck in the future. We'll talk to you soon.
Thank you, man.
So let's talk a little bit about that fight. A must win. And it's tough to always say that to a guy or to dance around that as I kind of did without saying, you got to win, dude. But both guys, you got to win, dude.
Yeah, especially Matt Brown, who's lost three in a row. We mentioned earlier in the program that UFC usually cuts guys if they lose three in a row. So the fact that he's fighting, they gave him one more chance, you know, shows that they really think that this guy has something. John Howard kind of got kind of jumped up a little bit. You know, he's fighting in the preliminary fights, had a fantastic knockout of Dan Ninja Roberts, and it was knockout of the night. That kind of, perked everybody's interest and ended up getting a few more fights. Had a fight against Jake Ellenberger, I believe, where Ellenberger punched him in the head so many times, it looks like he was growing a second head yeah. above his eye.
The hematoma, the most popular thing in
the hematoma, yeah. And then lost a decision to Thiago Alves, correct?
Yes,
yeah,
correct.
So, you know, it's not like he lost to a couple of scrubs. You know, these guys, you know, tough opponents he has. But, yeah, could be fighting for his UFC life.
It's interesting because, you know, Howard, kind of as I alluded to, came in 14-4, came into the UFC. He's been in here for a while. I mean, he had a nice win streak. So I think it gives him some street cred in terms of some legitimacy there. And I think that's one of the reasons that Matt Brown is still around is because he has a reputation for fighting tough fights. And John Howard has a reputation for fighting tough fights. So I think this is the fact that these two guys are both coming in off, you know, good-sized losing streaks. but they're on the televised card. I think that tells you a lot about what the UFC expects out of this fight. I think both guys are going to be swinging for the fences, and not to sound cliche, but I think this is going to be a hell of a fight.
Yeah, and John Howard said as much. You know, we're going out there, and both of us are just going to start swinging. Now, Matt Brown has been submitted his last three fights. Mm. So I don't know if John Howard will even approach trying to submit him, or if he just thinks that I need to win this fight, and I need to knock him out so I don't get cut from this organization, from the UFC. But if I would go back and watch all those tapes, because if he's getting submitted like that, you know, his last three fights, I think I would game plan for that and be like, all right, you can go out swinging, but, you know, if you catch him here, catch him and submit him and take a win any way you can get it.
All the fights will be, the undercard fights actually going to be streamed on Facebook. Let's talk about those real quick. Just going to go through the list. Because like I said, the fact that two guys that are on losing streaks on the main card is impressive, considering on the undercard you have Tyson Griffin versus Manny Gambierian, Tyson Griffin's featherweight debut, I believe.
Yes.
Joe Stevenson and his featherweight debut versus Javier Vasquez. Those are going to be two really awesome fights. Joe Lauzon, Massachusetts boy, against Kurt Warburton. Joe Lauzon, a guy that, you know, last August at the UFC in Boston event just brought the house down with an amazing knockout of Rob Emerson, one of the most insane environments I've been a part of. And he's fighting on the undercard. Just quickly, thoughts on those three fights?
Well, I think it's good, like we mentioned, that some of these fighters here who have struggled and not been able to really progress in their weight class have dropped down. Tyson Griffin, one of those guys, has just kind of been meandering through the UFC the past couple of years. Joe Stevenson, the same way, can go out, look very impressive, and then go out and just kind of look blah. Mm-hmm. So I think this might help both of these guys, you know, maybe get back into it a little bit. Joe Lauzon is very exciting. His brother fought, was it last week or is he?
Last week.
Yeah.
Yeah, actually, we should real quick talk about that. So Dan Lauzon beat Noah Wiseman, first round submission, I believe. I don't have in front of him. He'd been in a first round, finished him, and supposedly he was pretty dominant. So Noah Wiseman, great guy, but did not have the luck of the WGA MMA show.
We're batting .500 with that right now. So hopefully we can bring some luck to John Howard.
I would hope so. So also on the card, Daniel Ninja Roberts against Rich Antonito. Nick Lentz, Charles Oliveira. That should be a very fascinating fight. Oliveira, submission ace against Nick Lentz. Ricardo Lamas versus Matt Grice. And Michael Johnson, a finalist in The Ultimate Fighter from a couple seasons ago, finally making his return.
Against Edward Falaloto. That's the best I can do. Falaloto. Edward Falaloto.
That's why PJ's
we'll
the
go
best.
With that. I'm so bad with names. I'm terrible with names. You should hear me pronounce hockey names, too.
Tell them real quick where they can find us, PJ.
Find us at WGAMradio.com and go look under shows. Look for the WGAM MMA show. All our podcasts are there. You can check out the blog, WGAMMMA.blogspot.com. Follow us on Twitter at WGAM_MMA and also now on Facebook. Just search for WGAM MMA show.
Want to thank Bellator CEO Bjorn Rebney. Want to thank John Howard. Big weekend of fights. Strikes Force Friday, Bellator Saturday, UFC Sunday. For PJ Hewitt, I'm Josh Nason. Till next time, keep your chin down and your hands up.